and the dread of having misplaced my brother's dog. I don't expect Connor to join me, or to come as close as he does. And yet, here we are, studying each other as he watches me stay afloat, the indigo-tinted shadows playing on the bones of his face. "I can't believe it," I tell him.
"What?"
"Last night you made me come, and I didn't even wake up to your customary 'it was a mistake' note," I pout.
"I thought it was our thing."
"It's a joke. A funny one, I would argue," but his eyes turn laser-focused.
"Do you regret?"
"No," I say forcefully, shaking my head. I swim back toward the edge until my feet find solid ground. I sit on the rock and lean back, watching Connor not trust me about my own fucking inner life.
"If you don't want to..."
"Connor, please." I meet his gaze with a steady, amused expression. "I know it's asking for a lot, but do me the favor of not explaining my consent to me." His eyes shift skyward, but he comes back up too. The water barely laps at his upper thighs. "I like you this way," I tease.
"What way?"
I point at his body, the shorts plastered to his skin, the thick outline against the cotton. "When you can't hide that you want me."
"I always want you, Maya. And I've never been good at hiding it."
My toes curl against the stone. "Most people, including your closest friends, have no idea," I say, remembering what Minami told me last night. His snort echoes against the walls. "Then again," I continue, "you've been giving them what they wanted to see for a long while, haven't you?" I lean back, cross my legs. For the first time since we stepped on the island, I glance down at myself. He really does have an excellent view of my tits. And of everything else. "Do you really think that I'm a childish brat?" He winces, as though the conversation we had on the first day has been an ugly, achy thorn for him, too.
"I think you're impatient. I think you can be ruthless when it comes to getting what you want. And given the hand you've been dealt, you have every right to be."
He wets his lips.
"I don't think you're childish. And even if you were, you're young. You have so much room to grow and..."
A long, long pause.
"It doesn't matter, Maya, because I like you the way you are."
I smile. "It's nice when you let yourself treat me like I'm an adult woman." He works his jaw, like he's debating something inside his thick, unyielding skull.
"I like it too,"
he says at last, kneeling in front of me. The lower half of his body is submerged.
"It's my favorite thing in the world."
"What is?" I exhale, let him unfold my legs like I'm a doll and pick a position for me. "Acknowledging biographical truths?" He shakes his head, leans down, and I'm dizzy. I can't think when his tongue does that, licking droplets of salt water off my skin, finding a pebbled nipple through the see-through lace.
"Pretending that this could work. God, Maya."
"What?"
"I shouldn't touch you."
My hand finds his cheek. "I thought your weird little security blanket of a rule was that you could touch me, and I couldn't touch you."
"Fucking hell."
His breath comes fast, loud, even over the patter of the rain. I feel his forehead against my belly.
"Like I said,"
he mumbles, bending my knee, pushing my leg up.
"I was a goddamn saint for 3 years. I had it down. I knew exactly how to avoid you."
I run my fingers through his hair, watch him look down at me. The way the fabric adheres to every inch of my cunt. He can't see me yet, but he can. "Did you consider not coming to the wedding?" I ask.
"You know I did."
His hands find my inner thighs, splay me open so wide my muscles groan. He yanks my underwear to the side, none too gently. It bunches there, slick, right next to my bare slit, and I hadn't shaved in months before this trip. I did before coming here, simply because I knew I'd be wearing bikinis, and I'm glad of it now. I doubt Connor would care either way, but I love feeling every pass of his tongue, every little movement as he nibbles and teases and eats. He's not nice about it. Other guys have done this to me, and they weren't bad by any means, but there was a daintiness to it. Delicate licks, ghost-like touches. Connor groans. Connor sucks. Connor clutches and bites and swears. Connor looks, while eating me out, like other men do while I go down on them. Please, I gasp, not asking him for anything except to continue. He's relentless and ruthless. He can't read my mind, nor does he skip the awkward phase of figuring out what to do. He does, however, shorten it to just a handful of trials. Quick learner and all that. All those years in academia. Yes! There! I writhe, squirm against the rock even as it scrapes the skin off my back, lift my hips right off the ground to meet his mouth. The sounds he tears out of me echo through the cave, but I'm long past shame.
Fuck,
he says, and then he repeats it when I contract around the first knuckle of his thumb with a rush of heat. It slips inside me quickly, and my cunt squeezes it in, asking for more, and
fuck,
he says again, low and drawn out, and I wish I could tell him, show him how good this feels. But my orgasm shoots up my spine and wraps around my vocal cords. There is not enough air in the world. My body is made of snapping tension and loose pleasure and nothing else. This is how people die and still ask for more. Connor, I gasp after a while. Above me, little stalactites drip from the ceiling. You? I fall silent, because he does it all over again, with my fingers pulling at his hair and my heels shoving into the muscles in his back. His nose rubs against my clit, and he licks me clean, only to make me convulse again. And there is no scrabbling away from this pleasure. Not until he lets out a low, barely stifled growl against my inner thigh and decides that I'm free to go. Then I lie there. Most of my time is spent convincing Connor that I'm a grown woman, but right now I feel like a girl. A fluffy, insubstantial thing. Boneless and winded, with nothing to keep time save for the residues of pleasure twitching through me. I can't move, not even to look him in the eye as I ask, "Let me do it to you." He slides my underwear back in place, and even that makes me spasm. His forehead slides against my belly, supplicant-like. Close-lipped kisses right below my navel. A silent no. Connor. I pet the short hair at his nape. I would love to suck you off. His voice is muffled against the skin of my stomach.
I already...
I know you came when I did. His hands got really rough for a while there. His grunt filled the entire cave. Let me do it anyway. You'll like it. He chuckles.
You're being very optimistic about my ability to get it up again so soon. I'm certainly not in my prime.
Really, Harkness? I find the strength to prop myself up on my elbow. ED jokes? He shrugs, boyish. Cute. Licks his lips. Not suggestive, just hungry. Happy.
They're all the rage in my age bracket.
He won't come to me, so I force myself to go to him, slip back into the water. My arms loop around his neck, his arms loop around my waist. I lay my cheek on his shoulder, and we float like that, peaceful. Overheated bodies cooling in the sea. The beat of the rain grows lighter, more spaced out. Golden sun rays begin creeping in. Not to set unrealistic expectations, I tell him lazily, but I think you would really enjoy having sex with me. I would make your head explode.
I think so too, since you always do.
Then why won't you let me?
Maya.
A weary exhale.
I don't want to take advantage of you by exploiting our age difference or power imbalance.
Connor. He stops, looks at me, patient. On any given day, how much time would you estimate you think about our supposed power differential? I'm trying to make him laugh, make him realize how ridiculous he is. But he doesn't break eye contact.
All of it,
he says, dead serious. My heart cracks. The backs of my eyes burn because... shit. Shit. If only you...
Maya, just don't. Please.
Don't what?
I don't need you to go down on me, or to blow my mind, or to show me how good it would be, because I've already imagined all of it. All I want is...
He pulls me even closer. My chin nestles into the side of his throat.
This is enough. Just having you here for a few minutes.
You don't have to settle for a few minutes. I want to scream. I'm here. I'm here for you to take. You can have all of my time. Can I at least kiss you? Calmly, he says.
I'd rather you didn't.
I squeeze my eyes shut, trying to keep my anger locked inside. Poor Connor, I think. My beloved control freak, so afraid to lose it. Poor Connor. And poor me. Okay, I say, tightening my embrace, feeling him do the same to me. I like to think that contact helps. That his flesh is whispering to mine. All the things he cannot say. All the things he never says. All the things he doesn't want to say. I let myself get lost in the fantasy of his body and mine eloping together. Building the future we'll never have. They'll keep each other up well past their bedtimes. Go antiquing during little weekend trips in rural Texas. Adopt pets from the local shelter. I make myself chuckle. Which is better than bursting into tears. Connor pulls back, probably to ask me what's wrong with me. Which is, to the second, when I feel a burning pain in my calf. Chapter 31. Lucrezia is adamant. Connor should pee on me. Excuse me? I ask after a few good-measured blinks. But she keeps pointing at my calf, and Connor's translation doesn't change.
She insists that urine is the best remedy for jellyfish stings.
Lucrezia nods, pleased to have shared her wisdom with us, and glances down at where we sit on the plush velvet couch, perhaps waiting for Connor to unbutton his pants. Is this from the same suggestion box that wouldn't let me swim until 2 hours past breakfast?
Probably. I also caught her throwing salt behind her shoulder the other night. Her medical advice might not be the most solid.
Ask her this. If I eat a seed, will a plant sprout in my stomach?
I already have.
What did she say?
Only if I first piss on it.
I bite my lip to avoid snorting. One of my curls has dried askew, keeps falling on my forehead, and when Connor pulls it back behind my ear, I forget how to breathe. What I don't fully understand is, I say, struggling to stay focused. Why does it have to be your pee? I am perfectly capable of producing my own.
Maybe she has better faith in my aiming skills.
Is this a kink of yours? Are you hiding behind a poor, elderly woman to introduce water sports in our sex life? He blows out a heavy sigh, amused.
We do not have a sex life, Maya.
Bummer, I pout, then glance at Lucrezia. It's okay. Not bad at all, I say with my most brilliant smile, but she mumbles something, unconvinced.
She asked if it hurts.
Tell her less than Connor Harkness's persistent rejections.
You're going to have to learn Italian and do that yourself. She also wants to know if you'd like her to call Dr. Cacciari.
To pee on me?
He may not want to smile, but oh, how he fails.
I've seen a tube of hydrocortisone lotion in the first aid kit. Just wait here and don't let anyone piss on you.
You never let me have fun!
I yell after him, then limp toward Eli, who's watching Rue carefully pet the dog we rescued. On his brow, there is a deep frown.
Where's the vet's office?
I ask.
Just 5 minutes away. She'll see us in an hour.
Nice.
The vet will be unpleasant, Rue explains to the puppy, but ultimately harmless. I advise you to just go with what they ask.
Some would baby talk at an animal, but Rue? Not the type.
Maybe, afterward, we should take him to the closest shelter.
Eli suggests, from his tone, not for the first time. Or the second. But it would break Tiny's heart, Rue points out. They're already close friends. They've been inseparable since Maya and Hark brought them back. We can't split them up.
Baby, I get it. But we can't just import a dog.
Why not?
Because we're about to get married and go on a honeymoon.
Rue scowls. And so do I. I lower myself to the floor, joining the pile she's been forming with the dogs, taking sides. I would like to remind you, I whisper in her ear, that if at any point during this week you don't get what you want, it is within your sacrosanct rights to go full-blown bridezilla.
Is it?
Absolutely. In fact, I think it would be fun. Her wide, serious eyes study me. Then her mouth twitches.
Who would that be fun for?
Me? But also for Biddy.
Biddy?
I shrug. Wouldn't Biddy be the perfect name for Tiny's companion? She leans forward, eye level with the stray, holds his gaze for a few moments, then asks, Do you like it? Biddy? Biddy licks her cheek in the sloppiest of kisses, and when I look at Eli, I know what he's seeing. Someone who, until 2 years ago, used to be distrustful of pets, advocating to get a second dog. My heart balloons. I don't know what Eli's does, but I'm willing to bet that it's about 10 times more grandiose than mine, because he says,
I guess I'll figure out how to bring Biddy home.
Rue takes his face in both hands and presses a too intense kiss on his mouth. Don't worry about your honeymoon, guys. I'll take care of importing him. I have nowhere to go in the near future.
Right.
Eli says jokingly, lips against Rue's cheek.
You're only moving to California or Boston, finding a place to live, starting a new job, getting acclimated.
Yes, yes, I reply, but I'm already wobbling outside to avoid listening, climbing the stairs with that mouthful of shame rising in my throat. It reminds me of a time when Eli would look at me and see only failure, of being 14 and a tangle of grief and anger and regret. It weighs like iron in my stomach. The terrible knowledge that I'm again careening toward disappointing him.
What's wrong, Maya?
I'm on the landing, and Connor is in front of me. I blink, taken aback by his sudden presence. When I touch my cheek, my fingers stay dry. How does he know that something's wrong? Nothing. He seems skeptical, but shows me the tube of lotion he's carrying.
Come back to the living room so we...
No, here.
On the stairs.
I nod, sit on the closest step, hold out my open palm. I don't expect him to kneel in front of me and screw the cap off. I'm capable of reaching my own ankle. And the sting is going away on its own anyway. But he squirts the gel on his palm first, warming it up for a few seconds. That's why, when it makes contact with the skin of my calf, the feel of it is soothing. His touch is gentle and economical. Purposeful, but also lingering. Palms rough. Anchoring. The weight in my stomach doesn't lift, but it morphs. Simmers to something else. Equally heavy, but not as unpleasant. Connor? He looks up at me. One of his hands rests around my calf. The other cups the arch of my foot, closes on my heel. Can I ask you something? He doesn't say yes, but his thumb swipes over my ankle bone. You know how you and Eli almost got your STEM PhDs, and then you were asked to leave your programs? And it somehow became the catalyst for the rest of your lives?
I'm familiar, yeah?
I swallow. If you had a younger sibling...
I have three of them. Trouble.
Right. Let me start again. You know me, right? He nods. Doesn't let go of me. If I was different from... I take a too deep breath. Blink quickly. If I didn't have my shit together. If I wasn't as sure as everyone thinks. If I cannot finish the sentence. Still, Connor's lips press together, and for a heartbeat he looks so displeased I regret everything. Asking the questions, coming to Sicily, being fucking born. But then, he says,
I doubt that there's anything in the entire universe that would make me think less of you, Maya.
My throat feels too tight. I can't avert my eyes from his. Yeah? Connor leans forward, his lips cool, only just parted, press against the divot under my knee.
Yeah,
he says. Chapter 32. Biddy is, in fact, a puppy. Around 8 months, according to the vet, and in very good health. In the next few days, he'll be given an astounding number of shots, and then... Are you really planning to bring him back to the U.S.? The vet asks.
If I don't, my fiancé might kill me.
The vet's eyes immediately flit to me. Oh, no, I'm not the fiancé. I'm his...
Daughter.
Eli says with a grin, draping his arm over my shoulders. I hate it when you do that, I mumble.
I know. That's why I do it.
Eli presses a fatherly kiss on the crown of my hair, oblivious to the way Connor pinches his nose. Even the most long-standing of jokes hits different when you just spent a good chunk of your morning going down on your best friend's not-daughter in a cave. I'm not sure how it ended up this way. Eli, Connor, and I, together at the vet like a big happy family, then riding back home in the ever-present red Fiat. Can you lower your window? I ask. After a rocky start with the car, Biddy is climbing over my lap, showing some interest in the outside. There's no button back here. Eli looks back at me, elbow leaning out of the window.
When we were young, car windows had to be manually cranked down. And it was a big pain.
Please, not the dad jokes.
You didn't like it?
Nope.
I'm shattered.
I groan. I'm begging you.
Hi, begging you. I'm Eli.
Okay. Connor, could you please pull over? Biddy and I are walking home. Eli sighs.
And here I was, thinking you were cracking up.
When we get back, Paul is on the patio, working at his laptop. Connor steps aside to take one of his big important money calls, and Eli and I decide to document Tiny and Biddy's shameless reunion love fest. They have been apart for less than 45 minutes.
If you change your mind, I'll take him,
Paul offers after a while.
I've always wanted a dog.
I look up from my canine masterpiece of a photo shoot. What? No way! It must have come out a little aggressive because he looks at me befuddled, but I don't back down. Get in line, Paul. If anyone who's not Tiny gets Biddy, it's me.
He'd be closer to Tiny with me,
Paul quips back, teasing, flirty, and I'm genuinely outraged. There was a time when I was 11 or 12 and so lonely that I could feel it in my bone marrow that I dreamt of some kind of serendipitous meeting like the one with Biddy. I'd rescue a pet, and we'd be inseparable forevermore. Middle school fantasies die hard, and Paul is not getting this dog. No, he wouldn't. Plus, he likes me.
California's a lot closer to Texas than Massachusetts. It would be easier to visit.
To his credit, he immediately realizes that he fucked up. It must be my expression. The way I'm staring at him like I plan to vacuum his heart out of his mouth.
Warren, we had a call this morning. He mentioned that you formally refused Sanchez's offer. I assumed that...
What?
Eli asks. Paul flinches.
Oh, crap. I'm sorry.
I don't relax my glare.
I didn't. I figured that if I was told, I must be the last one to know.
My eyes narrow to slits, and he takes a few steps away, clearly terrified of me. I can't believe I used to have a crush on this guy, I mutter to myself.
In your defense, you were very young,
Eli says dryly.
Now, if we can go back to the major life decision you forgot to share with the class.
It's not like that.
Did you turn down Sanchez's offer?
I try to stop my throat from convulsing. I was waiting till after the wedding to tell you.
Okay.
Eli's eyebrow lifts like nothing about this is even remotely okay.
But why? Is there a reason why you didn't want me to know?
Eli, I never said that I didn't want you to know. He blinks like I'm a Riddler guarding a treasure room.
I don't. I thought you were past the stage of your life where you hide things from me.
I'm not hiding anything! There is a touch of hurt in his brief, single laugh.
Clearly there is something you're hiding. Since I found out that you'll be moving to Boston from Axel's brother.
I'm not moving to Boston, and Paul doesn't know shit! I shiver as fire climbs up my throat, that combination of hot and cold that I'm all too familiar with. Eli crosses his arms, impatient, and this is how it's always been between us. My anger and his fueling each other. These standoffs, they would happen every day when I was a teenager, and now I... don't want to fall back into that. Listen, I take a deep breath. Another. Five fingers. I don't think this is the best time to discuss this. Can we please both take a step back and...
Why is it such a big deal? Letting me know about the MIT position. I told you from the start that I would support you no matter...
Because I didn't accept the MIT position! I nearly scream. I deferred! I called Jack, and he said that he'd try to keep my position open for another year, but that is contingent upon the funding situation at the research center, and the Fermilab spot is going to go to someone else. There! Now I told you! Are you happy? Eli looks at me like I'm still 12, and he decided out of the blue that I could no longer watch my favorite show because it was too violent, that I needed to have a bedtime, that I couldn't hang out with my friends because they were too old for me. I can barely breathe.
What the hell is going on, Maya? Why are you being so childish?
Why are you treating me like I'm some adolescent who needs to keep you apprised of... A dam bursts and anger bleaches my brain. All I see is red. All I hear is my heartbeat. This rage? Sometimes I feel like it's what I'm made of. A bunch of crimson molecules scoring through me, leaving nothing but resentment behind. You know what, Eli? Screw you! I'm not going to let you talk like that to me. I stalk away, down the stairs of the patio, hating Eli, hating Paul, above all, hating myself for the way... Something blocks my path, and I nearly trip. When I look down, I see Connor's forearm. It strains against my belly like a damn turnstile. If you don't let me go...
Maya!
Connor! If you...
Will you focus on me for just a second, please?
I do. Gradually, the rest of the world, waves, shrieking seagulls, Biddy's playful nipping of Tiny, recedes.
What the hell is going on?
Eli asks, but it comes from a distance, easy enough to ignore.
I'm not going to force you to stay here.
Connor murmurs, bending down to my temple.
But you've told me several times that when you get angry at someone you love, you often wish it occurred to you to take a deep breath.
I blink. It takes a moment, but I can register the meaning of his words over the sharp, toxic rush of my blood. I hesitate. Nod once. Brusque.
Will you look me in the eye?
He asks. I do, sullen, and immediately feel grounded. When the anger comes, my therapist always says, focus on the things around you. Name them. Try to be more in your body and less in your head. And I do see Connor. I see the balustrade. I see the ocean. And the rosemary. And the red Fiat. And this beautiful place where my brother gathered us for his wedding. He's being a dick, I say, harsh.
Yes, he is.
I bite my lip.
But you're not being wholly reasonable either.
I close my eyes. After a few laps of the waves against the shore, Connor adds,
from the outside, this looks like two people overreacting. You and Eli are not enemies.
It's that simple, really. I love Eli so much, and... I turn back around. My brother is glancing between me and Connor, clearly baffled by our interaction. But now that I'm thinking more clearly, I can tease apart the different emotions on his face. Irritation, yes. Certainly. Anger, but also worry and anxiety. Above all, confusion. I take a deep breath. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be... He shakes his head.
No, I... Me neither. I didn't mean to act like...
Our sentences swing aimlessly between us. If we were less stubborn, we'd be laughing at ourselves and at each other.
Can you just tell me what's going on? I'm...
He widens his arms.
Worried. Not because I think you're a child. Because I don't understand.
It's okay. I'm not 15. I didn't just beat up some guy who hit on me because crazy girls give great head. Eli is not trying to ground me. He's on my side. I don't want it, Eli. Not right now. Maybe not ever. He nods, even as he asks.
You don't want?
Either. I'm not sure yet. I don't know if I want to be in academia because I don't like it. It's a competitive, ultra-high-pressure, deadline-heavy environment that sometimes seems more aimed at perpetuating itself than at any kind of scientific improvement. Scientists are barely in the position of doing their job, and many of them seem miserable. And if I only have one life, shouldn't I spend it doing something that will bring me joy? I scratch my forehead. Not that a corporate position would do that, since it has all the downsides of academia, plus the goddamn fact that sometimes there's no room for ethical considerations or to assess the social impact of... I stop, rub a hand down my face. Wait until I feel calm before saying, I had two great offers. And I know you were proud of me because of it. But neither is what I want. Not right now. I'm just not ready to commit to either career yet. Eli blinks.
Maya, if you need to take some time off, I can help you.
I've accepted another position before coming here. And for the first time in months, I'm actually excited about next year.
What position, Maya?
I'll be teaching at an elementary school, I swallow. I got my certification, and... Eli looks utterly lost. And Connor... I'm not looking at him, but I can feel his eyes burning a hole through me.
Where?
In Austin.
You're staying in Austin?
I nod.
Is this about...
He glances at Connor, and... Boy, do I have to take another deep breath. No, Eli, but it's nice to know that you think I'd upend my entire life for some guy who barely knows that I exist.
No, I...
He spreads his hands, white flag.
You're right. That was uncalled for, and I'm sorry. I guess I just don't get... You never mentioned wanting to... Why?
Because I want to try. Because it sounds rewarding and fun. Because the world needs teachers. Because I like kids. Because I love the idea of helping them get excited about something I'm excited about. Because I want to feel like every day has meaning. Because, listen, I don't know if that's what I want to do for the rest of my life. I mean, it looks hard. I may end up being terrible at it, but...
No.
I blink. No?
No, you'd be great at it.
Eli sounds certain, almost dismissive.
Were you afraid that I wouldn't think so? Is that why you didn't bring it up earlier?
No, I would have told you, after the wedding, if... I glance at Paul, who's at least still looking mortified. Someone hadn't outed me.
Outed feels like the wrong word to...
Shut up, Paul! Eli and I say in unison. Then I explain. I would have told you. I just wasn't sure whether you'd be disappointed, so I was going to wait until after the honeymoon.
Maya, how could I be disappointed?
He steps closer, looking genuinely amused.
Have I ever given you the impression that I don't find teachers valuable, or praiseworthy, or sincerely heroic?
No. But you said it yourself. You're always bragging about my research. Sometimes I feel like you want me to be what you weren't able to. And it scares me, the idea that if I don't become a scientist... Eli laughs, comes close enough to wrap both my shoulders in his palms.
Maya, I am proud of you. But not of your degrees, or your awards, or your titles. I'm in awe of who you are. The key word is who you are, not what you do. It doesn't matter if you win a Nobel Prize for physics or become a javelin thrower. You're still going to be the same person.
He pinches my cheek like he used to when I was a kid, and I don't mind too much. Actually, it's kind of nice.
I wanted to be a scientist, and it didn't work out. But if you don't want to be a scientist, I don't care. Knowing that you're doing what you want is all I need. You should make decisions with your own happiness in mind, as opposed to some vicarious wish fulfillment centered on me.
Really?
Really. And I want you to stay in Austin.
You do?
Yes. When you were in Switzerland... Rue and I kept saying how much we missed you.
You did?
Yes. Not because we love you,
or you're fun to have around, mind you. But we do need someone to walk the dozens of dogs we're in the process of acquiring. And to take care of the plants.
He grins.
Cheap labor.
I nod. Hope warms my stomach. So, we're good?
We're great.
I smile. Eli does too, pulling me in for a bear hug. A throat clears.
Okay, well, I'm so happy that my accidental screw-up led to you guys having such a beautiful heart-to-heart, but...
Shut up, Paul! Eli and I say. This time, Connor joins in too. Chapter 33. The Mount Etna eruption is still ongoing. The airport will be closed for the next 24 hours, at the very least. Despite Neota's continuing threats, Rue still does not have a dress. Eli's wedding planner bursts into tears during their Zoom call and asks to be replaced. The person who owns the ice rink where Rue, Eli, and I used to skate, and who is supposed to officiate the wedding, informs us that he's too scared of the wee bit of lava trickling down toward Catania to fly in. All in all, it's the perfect night for a wine tasting. We head out at sunset. The vineyards are beautiful, even more so in the purple blanket of twilight. The live band is instrumental and jazzy, soft and melodic in a way that soothes my growing anxiety that this wedding might not be able to happen. The wine... I try very hard not to let my real opinion show, but I hold on to my deeply held beliefs. All wine tastes the same. And that same is rotten grapes. You're not even supposed to drink it, Neota says, frantically trying to turn me into a classier person. You let it swish in your mouth, savor the finish and the aftertaste, and then spit it out. So I get to suffer through the shitty flavor and no booze? I'm not bougie enough for this. Fix yourself! She yells after me, or I won't take you with me as my plus one when I become a lobbyist for Big Grape! I find Connor at one of the round patio tables, sitting with Sol, and settle next to him. They're laughing about someone they know who might be going to prison for financial shit, making jokes about the relationship between ayahuasca retreats and a CEO's ability to maximize shareholder value. When Avery and Diego join us, they switch to Kaida's daycare, one of their quants exiting his polycule after 5 years, lower back pain, retirement funds, the Super Bowl. The way youths these days can't write in cursive. I lace my hands together, drape them over the back of my chair, lay my head on them, and watch it all happen. I may not have much to contribute, but this is fun.
I swear to God,
Diego says.
The new interns, they don't know how to sign a document. Ours bitch that they can't read my handwriting. Fucking children.
Connor shakes his head, then glances at me.
No offense.
None taken. I smile sweetly. Under the table, I squeeze my hand around his thigh. Feel free to start discussing how much lower your testicles have been hanging of late. Avery spits out her wine. Sol is very close to choking on his cheese cube, so I pat him on the back as I head to check on Neota, who's huddled with Tisha.
Okay, so...
Tisha lifts her fingers and starts counting. First of all, fuck. Second, shit. Third, goddamn. I was expecting you to continue with the alliterations. Neota looks at me, shaking her head. An all-you-can-eat source of disappointment, my sister. What happened?
We're in trouble, Tisha explains. Our parents just told us that they're no longer flying in, and they were in charge of bringing the present I bought for Rue, this super cute emerald necklace that looks like a leaf. What am I supposed to give her now?
I could lend you the tri-legged magnet Maya got me, Neota offers.
Ugh, shut up. What are you giving Rue?
A follow on Instagram. I whistle. Lucky girl. I know. Neota sips her rosé. But it's only
on a trial basis. The first time she posts a picture of a mountain range with an inspirational quote superimposed, I'm blocking her.
You're safe with Rue, I reassure her. Do I get a follow me?
I'm your goddamn sister.
Not online, you aren't. Not until you start curating your profile. For the love of baby toddler Jesus, stop using hashtags like it's 2014.
I'm worried about Rue, so I go search for her. The main building of the winery has a lovely porch-like balcony that wraps around it. I walk to the back of it, and that's when I find her, sitting at a bench in the vineyard below, facing Mount Etna as the oranges and reds slowly trickle out of the uppermost crater. Eli is with her, one arm wrapped loosely around her waist. God, I mutter.
What?
Connor asks. Somehow his sudden appearance doesn't startle me. Look at them. They love each other a cringeworthy amount. They just want to be married, and the damn underground magma is not dense enough to let them.
Isn't it the opposite?
What?
Isn't the underground magma too dense?
The magma has to have enough buoyancy to rise to the surface.
I thought the main factor was gas bubbles that...
He shakes his head, chuckles as he leans forward, palms against the railing. What?
I can't believe I was arguing over fluid dynamics with you.
Neither can I. Shall I school you on the NASDAQ?
And on my low-hanging testicles, too.
He looks at me sternly, desperately trying to pretend he didn't enjoy the way I called him out. I sit against the railing, facing him, to make it even harder on him. Should I have talked about your PhD?
I never got one.
Don't be modest, Connor. You have a pretty huge dick. A thoughtful stare.
You really are.
He muses.
A constant menace.
I try.
Are you drunk?
Nah, wine's too grapey. You? He shakes his head. What's your excuse? You're not one of us, the unwashed masses. You like wine. You have a refined palate. You pair shit, and... I straighten in utter disbelief that I missed this. You're not drinking. He glances around as if to highlight the absence of a glass.
How observant of you.
No, not just right now. You no longer drink. I haven't seen you take a sip of alcohol since you got here. His stare seems to ask, do you want an award for noticing? And, yes, I do. Also wanted, answers. But you weren't...
An alcoholic? No, I don't think I was. But it got to be a bit much.
When?
A few months ago.
My throat seizes. About 10 or so? A pause. He nods, silent, and I have to clench my fist. All I want in the world is permission to reach out and kiss him. I nearly do so, but he adds,
I figured it might be better to take a break. I never liked myself much when I drank anyway. The things I said, they could be quite cruel.
I can relate. There have been approximately 10,000 times in the last few years when I haven't liked myself. 9,900 of them, I was angry and said something unfair to someone who didn't deserve it. Do you miss it?
Hating myself or drinking?
Either, I suppose.
I miss the alcohol, sometimes. Often, even. Not this week, though.
Why not? The look he gives me practically begs me to keep up. Come on, Maya, you know why. Use that top recruit brain of yours.
To make up for it, I still give myself plenty of opportunities for self-loathing.
Glad that's taken care of. If you need any help...
Don't worry, Maya. You remain the reigning queen of my regrets.
A dull ache spreads through my bones. But he's smiling, like he wants to turn this into banter, into our usual back and forth, and... Let's dance, I say. The music is faint, the balcony poorly lit, and I don't think I've ever danced to slow music in my entire life. Still, I pull him closer.
Maya, it's not a good...
But we're already doing it. My arms are wrapped around his waist and we're swaying. And after a moment, he's holding me too, even tighter than I do him. Hi, I say into his shirt.
Hi, Trouble.
His lips find the top of my head. Linger. We're barely moving.
This is not dancing. This is a hug.
But I can pretend if that's what he needs. I bury my face in his chest and say, thank you for today, with Eli.
You're welcome.
His hand caresses my hair.
You'd have both calmed down on your own eventually.
True, but it was nice, not wasting half a day resenting him. My therapist would be proud of you.
Mine would be proud of me too.
I laugh, clutch the cotton of his shirt. Connor?
Yeah?
I really...
Hey, hark! The cars are...
Avery cuts off as she rounds the corner of the balcony. Her expression shifts from amused to confused to hurt. Betrayed. I put some space between Connor and me, but it's too late. She clears her throat. The... cars will be leaving soon, she says, then spins on her heel and leaves. We return to the villa. The sky is starless, pitch black except for Mount Etna, which spits out little bursts of fire, then large waves of smoke. Everyone makes Mordor jokes. Paul brings up the apocalypse. Axel asks what Mordor is. Avery laughs a little too loudly. There's a prehistoric flavor to this. Beautiful, yes, but also a reminder of the insignificance of our little lives. Job interviews and marriage certificates and normal range of iron levels and tax extensions and a 15-year age gap and even the Friedman Doctrine. Do they matter when the earth is sputtering fire like a giant dragon? I steal a glance at Connor. But he's not looking at me. Surely we're not just going back to our respective rooms. The world is ending. Sauron might take over Middle Earth. But Minami pulls him aside. They talk by the pool, clearly worried for Eli and Rue and the wedding, and I don't have a good excuse to loiter. I climb the stairs up to my room and nearly have a coronary when I find my brother in the upholstered chair by my desk. Why am I having flashbacks to that time I snuck out past curfew and came back to you sitting on my bed? He chuckles. After our fight, I feel more relaxed around him than I have in a long while.
And you kept insisting that you'd just gone for a run.
I had.
You reeked of weed and wore a denim miniskirt.
Oh, right. I laugh. Then maybe I hadn't.
That's why I grounded you for a month. Out of curiosity, where were you?
I think at the time I was hanging out with a guy whose older sister went to UT. She would get us into parties at the dorms all the time. He nods like I've solved an ancient mystery.
Then maybe that's the reason I'm reminding you of that night.
He sighs.
Maya, I think we need to talk about Hark.
Chapter 34. It's unsettling how easily I slip back into my adolescent tactics, as though the instinct to lie, deflect, omit will forever be embedded within me. What's up? I ask, batting my eyes innocently. Anything I should know? Eli gives me a calm, slanted look. It lasts long enough for me to ask myself, what the hell are you doing? I'm sorry, that was uncalled for. Let's start again. What about Connor? Eli's tongue roams his cheek. Clearly, seeing us interact during the fight must have given him some food for thought.
You know, for For a while there, I wondered if you were just pretending to like him because you enjoyed watching me squirm.
That was just a nice perk, I grin. Okay, before you start the overprotective older brother routine, allow me to give you a brief overview of the facts. Everything is consensual. I initiated it. He's not taking advantage of my wide-eyed youth. He's not breaking my heart. He's not...
Are you?
Using his considerable influence to... Excuse me?
Are you breaking his heart?
It's like a mischievous child is shaking the little snow globe in which I dwell, and now the world is upside down. So, you're not here to inform me that if this continues, you're going to lock me in Rapunzel's tower and beat up your closest friend for ruining me? You're here to tell your barely legal little sister to be gentle with the rich older guy. Eli licks his teeth.
Put this way, it sounds fucked up.
I nod, thoughtful, but say, I find this very flattering.
You do?
At least you are giving me agency. I'm not wholly sure why you're siding with him, but...
I'm not. It's not about siding, Maya. I'm just worried about the one who clearly has feelings.
I laugh, then realize that he's serious. You think I don't?
I...
Eli's palm draws circles against his temple.
It's different. He's different. With you, I mean. I think it's the way he looks at you. I've never seen him like this.
Like what?
Like he could become unhinged really quickly.
A sigh.
In the last couple of years, he's been very protective of you, but...
Are we talking about Connor Harkness? Eli looks at me like I'm an ungrateful toddler.
Yes, Maya. He cares about your well-being. He checks in, pays attention when you come up in conversation. Remember that hard-to-get computer Minami gave you as a graduation present?
Yeah.
He's the one who pulled strings to get it. And,
Eli snorts.
You know how he feels about UT after they kicked us out, right?
I nod.
The year you enrolled, he started donating to the College of Natural Sciences.
What? Why?
One of the lessons he got from Phineas Harkness. Buy influence in places where you might need it.
I didn't need it. I got in on my own merit. That was unnecessary.
I know. And so does he. But Hark's a planner. He has little trust in institutions or their commitment to decent behavior. And he cared about you. So he made sure that in the eventuality you needed something, his